1 degrees in the forecast. 46 degrees now. KQEN News Time is 12:35.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Second program of the new year, we are joined again by County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer to look at COVID-19. Dr. Bob, thanks for being here again.
Well, thank you for having me again.
Let's talk about the vaccine situation. Where do things stand right now? Are we still at two vaccines, or are there more slated to be heading out?
Well, there are two vaccines that have been approved by the FDA. Those are the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer vaccine. Both of those vaccines are mRNA vaccines, and both require two doses. We're going to be looking at the Johnson & Johnson and the AstraZeneca vaccine, hopefully sometime in the next few months, but that has not yet been finalized.
Now, one of the things that's come out really in the last day or so, and appears nationally, is that folks are saying the vaccine is being rolled out very slowly.
Well, the vaccine is being rolled out very judiciously. So this is going to be a marathon. And really, we're looking at where we are in the first 500 yards. I will tell you, having been in a bunch of those races where you're in the first 500 yards has no bearing to success later on. So some states, for example, have just opened the doors and said, we'll have 14-hour lines for people to get vaccine. Oregon is doing this much more judiciously. I think what you'll find is in the next few weeks that Oregon has really a great program to deliver vaccine to its people.
And yesterday, Governor Kate Brown talked about it, said that she felt like Oregon, in terms of ratio of population and those being vaccinated, was pretty much keeping up with the other states, but echoed that, said that needed to be speeded up and looking at being up to 12,000 doses a day within the next couple weeks.
Right. We think that the state needs to get to be far more than that when we finally get going. We think we probably are going to need to be about 40,000 doses a day when the vaccine is here. But there are a couple of problems. One is that the vaccine has just arrived very recently. In fact, we're supposed to get a delivery tomorrow, and I just found out about it today at noon. So there's not a lot of planning time. And then there's a bunch of uncertainty on the state and federal level. One of the uncertainties, for example, is if someplace has excess vaccine, can they give it to somebody else? And it was unclear until this morning about whether they could do that.
And talk about how long it'll take to get everyone in this first group of people who are eligible to get them actually vaccinated.
Well, we have really confused people by having so many different overlapping words. So we started off with groups 1 and 2, and then they divided group 1 into 1A, 1B, 1C. And then they took 1A, and they divided that into 5 groups. And then they took one of those groups and divided it into 2 further groups. So it's very confusing. But to try and simplify, the 1A group are people in nursing homes and nursing facilities, EMS and other first responders, and healthcare workers. Depending upon how fast vaccine gets here, we might be able to get done by the end of January with those groups. But if vaccine arrives slower, it's going to take a longer time to get there.
And who are, or what types of folks are in the groups that fall after those two?
So group 1A, again, is people in nursing homes, healthcare workers, and first responders. Group 1B are people 75 and above and frontline essential workers. Group 1C are people 65 and above, those with underlying conditions, and other essential workers. And then group 2, which is going to start much later, are going to be everybody else.
What about for the county? You talked about just finding out that you're getting a bunch and you got to make plans and figure out how to do it. Are we going to have clinics, much like you've done with some of the COVID-19 situation, or what's planned?
So in the past, we had done these drive-through flu clinics, and these drive-through flu clinics worked well for the flu vaccine because there are very few reactions. You really don't have to wait after you get the shot. And we did not have to charge for the vaccine. It was everything was free. In this case, providers expected to charge for their administration fee, which means billing insurance or billing Medicare. The second is that this shot does require a 15 or 30 minute observation after you get the shot, and there are some reactions. So again, if you're going to get, it's rare, but if you're going to get a reaction, I don't think you want to get it at the fairgrounds. I think you want to get, if you're going to have a reaction, best to do this in a doctor's office or at the hospital. And so for those reasons, the mass drive-through things that we've done in the past really don't make a lot of sense for this vaccine. Rather, what we want to do for this vaccine is to have 30 or more places in the county that have the vaccine, and that people can go to their regular doctor to get the vaccine. If they don't have a regular doctor, there'll be other places for people to get it.
What about reactions? You mentioned that. I know that over the weekend, I think it was, there was a healthcare worker in Eastern Oregon that had an adverse reaction, and we're hearing about those periodically, which causes people to have some concern.
Well, it does cause people to have concerns of the relatively new vaccine, and we're seeing it about maybe 1 in 10,000 people who get the vaccine have a reaction where they have what looks to be an allergic reaction to it that's relatively easily treated with an EpiPen and Benadryl, but still scary nonetheless. And so we think about 1 in 10,000 people may have one of these kind of reactions. It's probably not more than that, but it may be as many as that. And thus we're asking people to be cautious, especially if you have a severe allergy to something else, have had a previous anaphylactic reaction. And in those cases, you may want to hold off. But for the rest of us, and about 99% of us have never had one of those reactions, we're the ones who should go ahead and get the shot.
Let's talk about the COVID-19 cases in the county. Just got the email a minute ago from the COVID-19 response team. 18 people with new positive test results since yesterday. It seems like we're kind of going back and forth here, but a bit of an uptick trend in the past 5 or 6 days.
That's right. So before Christmas, we had really a downtrend where the number of cases was going way down. But we've seen a number of holiday gatherings, a number of people who've had travel from out of state, and two large outbreaks that have really increased our numbers.
And what can you tell us about the outbreaks at this point?
Well, one of the outbreaks is a church-related outbreak. So it was a service, and then a bunch of people got infected related to that church. The second is there's a smaller outbreak at the mission. And so the mission people are living together in congregate setting, and there were some cases there. We think that outbreak is controlled at this point. The people who had been sick are been isolated. So we think the outbreak at the mission is mostly controlled. The outbreak at the church, we think, is, again, mostly controlled, but we're still starting to see new cases.
Now, with these outbreaks, we're into January. We're through the holidays now. Are you expecting to see our numbers start to trend back down?
Well, I would hope so. Again, we would not expect to see our New Year's Eve cases until the end of this week. Remember, about 5 to 6 days for people to have symptoms, a day or two to get tested. So we usually learn about these cases 7 or 8 days after the event, which for Christmas was 7 or 8 days after the event when we saw it. So we're still keeping our fingers crossed this week to see if we have a further rise. We're concerned because, you can remember, we were in the extreme range before, and then we moved down to the high-risk range. That high-risk range allows the gyms to open, allows bars and restaurants to have some indoor seating. So for our economy, it's an incredibly good thing to move down to that high range from the extreme range. We're just hoping that we can stay down there below that mark so that we can continue to keep our businesses open.
Now, is the county still on the lower side compared to other similar counties nationally?
Oh, absolutely. So when we had looked early last week, we think we were the lowest rate of any county with 100,000 population of anywhere in the country. We're now not maybe the lowest. The Honolulu County in Hawaii is below us, but we're still one of the lowest counties. Our hospitalizations, we've been less than 10 hospitalizations now for almost a week. And so overall, Douglas County is one of the least affected counties in the entire country.
And right now, on the new data, we're down to 3 COVID-19 patients being hospitalized in the county. That's probably the lowest it's been for a while.
That's been the lowest it's been since before Thanksgiving. So we're doing a good job. We brought the number of cases down. We're just hoping that these outbreaks that we've seen in the last few weeks don't continue to spread and that we don't have any new ones, because the goal will be to get more and more kids back to school. The goal will be to get even under the next range. So we're in the moderate risk. And when we're in the moderate risk, we can further open places like restaurants and gyms.
What about the state update? I've noticed lately, and it's not every day, but there are days that you see some of these smaller, even more rural counties than Douglas with a huge number for a day or two. Then they may maybe go back down, but sometimes they're in the top, five in the state.
Yeah, so what we see is, again, it's related to these large outbreaks. And this is an unusual disease in that, rather than most diseases where you'll pass it to one, two, or three people, this is a disease where many people will pass to no one, and then a few people will pass to many. So there was a story from California this week about that a Christmas in the emergency department. They didn't have a party, but they had somebody dressed up in one of these puffy costumes. And that person, they think, gave it to 44 other people. I mean, that is extraordinary with any disease that you would be able to spread it to that many people.
County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer back in a moment. The interview, a podcast after one at 541radio.com, 1247 at News Radio 1240, KQEN. Inside Douglas County, 1249, Lars Larson at 1, and True Wealth with David Littlejohn and Katie Shook coming up later, part of KQEN Local Talk at 4. County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer with us. Looking at COVID-19, what about the nation? What are some of the hotspot states right now? What are some of the numbers we're seeing in other locations?
So the real hotspots in the country right now are in California and Arizona. They're really seeing a tremendous number of cases and a tremendous number of hospitalizations. So they're very much struggling. But we're seeing lots of disease through the middle part of the country. Tennessee and Kentucky have had lots of cases. So we're seeing a bunch of cases through the country. The number of people in hospital yesterday was the highest ever. So we're clearly not past the peak.
Wow. Now, worldwide, every country's healthcare system and ability to provide healthcare varies widely. What are you seeing about countries that are particularly struggling right now?
Well, we see with this disease the greatest disparity between the countries with the lowest amount of disease and the countries with the most disease. So New Zealand, Taiwan, Hong Kong have had almost no disease at all. Australia, South Korea, Japan have had very low amounts of disease. And then on the other hand, Sweden, the U.S., the UK are really struggling with the amount of disease. So when we look at these countries, you talk about the number of new cases per 100,000 per day. So Douglas County has been about 10. Australia and New Zealand are less than 1. And the US and Sweden are over 40. So a 40-fold difference between the best performing countries and the worst.
What about schools? Let's talk about that for a moment. Recently, the governor moved the metrics for schools from mandatory to advisory. Some of the local county schools have gone back to some, if not all, in-person learning. Others are evaluating that now, and I know that you are involved in some of those discussions with school leaders.
Yes, we've been involved in many of those discussions. Schools are complicated. We do not think there's much spread at school itself. So when we look at our data here in the county, we don't know that there's been any cases spread in school. When we look at data from other places in other countries, when the rate of disease is low in the rest of the community, the rate of disease in school is low and the rate of transmission is low. However, when you have a lot of disease in the community, you'll have a lot of disease in schools. So that's another reason to bring the rates down so that we can safely bring our kids back to school.
And you've got the aspect as well that all those people in schools, kids and adults, are out in the community. And for schools, and it varies, of course, but you've got employees that are older, more vulnerable, even some with medical conditions, and that's probably going to factor in as well.
That will definitely factor in. In many other industries, people can work from home if they're old or sick or otherwise vulnerable. It's a little harder at schools. And so that's one of the real challenges we face with returning to school.
One of the things people talk about, you're hearing more and more about it, about the mental health impact on the kids, the parents, even the teachers and other school employees trying to do what they do, not being in person.
It's very, very hard. I'm in the clinic every week, and I talk to teenagers, and they're really struggling with this online stuff. One of the things we're especially seeing is that families that struggle with internet access, families that struggle with computer technology, really struggle during this time. And so we're afraid that some of our lower performing students are going to fall further and further behind.
And you have areas of the county, probably not so much around Roseburg, but some of the more rural locations that I have heard where it's a bit taxing on just the capacity of the Wi-Fi at your house, things like that. If you've got multiple kids learning from home and maybe even one or maybe two parents working from home as well.
That's very true. So when we talk to, for example, the people at Days Creek, their ability to do online school is really very limited, given the fact that there's not widespread high-speed access in that area.
What about schools and sports? I understand some teams are beginning to practice. Are they going to get to play?
I don't know. So that's a big question. You know, sports for kids in high school is such a big deal, and so that they'll want to play. And we know there are a lot of positive benefits to extracurricular activities, especially sports. And so we would love kids to get back. Couple of issues. One is it's really hard to maintain distancing in some sports, especially moderate contact sports like basketball, volleyball, and football. And then the second problem is that when you do a sports team, you're adding that number of kids to your cohort. So let's say you're a high schooler and you're in three different classes with 30 kids, and then on the football team with 60 kids. If you're positive now, you're going to infect 120 kids. Or affect 120 kids that may cause them now to have to be at home in quarantine. And so it's a very complex area, but sports we think are very important. Now, there are some sports that we think that students can do that are quite safe. Cross-country running, tennis, swimming, those things we think are going to be quite safe. I'm not sure how the sports is going to work. Certainly, we have missed high school sports.
And one of the things that I'm guessing, I certainly don't know right now, a lot of times as some of the practices are getting started to keep the cohorts down even to lower numbers, it's kids in a certain position or a place on the field or whatever that are maybe practicing instead of one big practice, having several different smaller practices and keeping the kids apart.
So schools have tried things like that, position drills. But so much of team sports is actually the team. And so working together as the entire offense or as the entire defense is an important thing. And as you know, in Roseburg High School sports, many kids play both sides of the ball so that they do have a hard time controlling cohort size. So we'll see how it works out. Everybody is hopeful that the amount of disease is going to continue to fall in the first half of 2021 so that by the end of the school year, hopefully disease would be low enough that we could go back to contact sports.
What about the business impacts of COVID-19? I know you really deal with the science, the medicine, the health side, but obviously you're watching a lot of businesses hit hard, a lot of people working less or laid off temporarily, having a big impact in that arena.
Yes. So the impact on people has been enormous. Small businesses, especially in the hospitality industry, such as restaurants or travel, have really been hurt. Other industries have been hurt less. So obviously in public health, we're pretty busy and have been able to employ lots of people. So it really has been differentially impacted. We certainly know that people of color clearly have suffered more than others. And people in areas where tourism is a big part of their industry have really suffered. So we really worry, for example, about the Oregon coast. so it really has impacted people a lot. We're hoping that we can keep the disease rate low so that we can open up those businesses again.
And talk about your role as one of the health advisors to the governor.
Yeah, so we met this morning, and she's a very good listener. She doesn't always take my advice, but she definitely listens, and we have spirited discussions about how we might proceed.
County Public Health Officer Dr. Bob Dannenhofer, thanks for being on this afternoon.
Well, thank you for having me.
1258 News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.